start the Planning Commission regular session meeting agenda. First up is, wait a second, okay, wait for the recording. Okay, call this meeting to order, the regular Planning Commission meeting. It's 7 p.m. and first up is roll call. Jim Patrick, here. Bill Brannigan?
Here.
Bob Berman?
Here.
Jim Hasselman?
Here.
Gary East?
Here.
Braulio Escobar?
Here.
Okay, approval of the minutes, approval of the Planning Commission work session meeting minutes of April 25th, 2022, and approval of the Planning Commission regular session meeting minutes of April 25th, 22.
Having read both sets of minutes and submitted one very minor correction to Sherry, which you all got a copy, I move we approve both the work session and regular session minutes of April 25th, 2022, as corrected.
I'll second that.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Okay, now we have the citizens' public comment. I believe we have Nyla on Zoom. You can pull that up for us.
Thank you.
I hear her, but don't see her yet.
She's not on video.
Oh, okay, just phone. Okay. This is your opportunity to make whatever comments you wanted to make.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. At the last meeting of the TSP Advisory Committee, language to include the intersection of U.S. Highway 101 and Sandbale Circle was specifically written to be included in the TSP. Now that language has been modified to number 5, add project to coordinate with ODOT to develop signage and or pavement marking solutions where appropriate to limit side street blockages by stopped vehicles. This project must be specifically named, as was discussed and agreed to at the last meeting of the TSP Advisory Committee, and must become a Tier 1 financially constrained project that needs immediate attention. Sandbale Circle must be specifically named because it's the only intersection in town specifically discussed with this unique and singular configuration. It needs the specific attention and construction discussed at the TSP Advisory Committee meeting, including a signal. The TSP consultant initially committed to putting it on the list. Fortunately for us, Bob Berman raised the issue at the last TSP meeting after my repeated public comment at prior meetings. I have a petition in support of a traffic control signal at our corner signed by 100 residents and persons who work near or own businesses and are affected by the intersection as evidence that I am not the only one who is concerned or cares about this issue. I learned a lot in gathering the signatures. I was told about waiting 20 minutes to exit our street onto US 101. I was shown a picture of a severe car crash proximate to our intersection and was told about others. People thanked me for gathering signatures. There are 62 dwelling units in our neighborhood and multiple businesses also use our intersection. Former Public Works Director Tim Gross described this area as traffic chaos. The TSP consultant admitted this area has the highest number of accidents in Newport. A prior neighbor was hit pulling out of our intersection when he was finally moving away. The park survey identified our area of town as having the largest number of children. School buses use our street. In the summer, pulling up to our stop sign is pulling up to the side of a car or multiple cars, which are backed up from 20th to at least McDonald's. If a person stops and allows us to exit, we are pulling into a center lane that competes with left turn cars going into Subway from the north, which also uses our street for its drive up window. We then come to a complete stop because of the pedestrian lane ODOT installed, forcing us to merge into 35 mile an hour traffic from a dead stop. No one consulted us regarding the pedestrian lane, which makes this exponentially worse. We are the only street with this configuration in Newport with no other exit for our neighborhood. It's been suggested we use private property to drive to Fred Meyer parking lot, then onto 20th Street to a traffic light. The manager of C-Town told me this is a trespass. Driving over 8 blocks out of our way is inconsistent with Goal 6 and is not a legitimate public policy solution. ODOT and former Senator Robun's office repeatedly advised me to work with the TSP to deal with this issue. I've been trying to solve this problem since Fred Meyer arrived and the ODOT and ODOT added the 20th Street signal to our neighborhood. I didn't move to this problem, it came to me. We were passed over during this development, and the goals of the TSP are to address public safety problems. We deserve safety at our intersection. We are entitled to a stoplight under ODOT's rules, have been for decades. In 2020, the system for calculating it was finally shared with me because of the estimate that the 2020 U.S. Census was over 10,000 population, which disqualified us from the signal we were entitled to for years. This problem is becoming increasingly more dangerous as tourism increases, with our population quadrupling last summer despite COVID. We want to keep our stop sign, and we want a left turn sensor in the pavement at our corner. The ODOT pedestrian lane already has infrastructure. It has flashing yellow lights for stopping traffic on 101 for pedestrians. We want red lights at the pedestrian lane to stop traffic for us and a crosswalk north of our intersection to create an ingress-egress zone at our intersection. This is a modest request and a critical safety issue for a complete neighborhood and population and a business area. Again, this project must be Tier 1 financially constrained project that needs immediate attention. With the federal infrastructure dollars coming to Oregon, there has never been a better time to solve this problem. Please amend the TSP to include this language for our intersection. I'd also like to add that, you know how the intersections on 101 are misaligned? 15th Street is really our misaligned intersection. And if San Bayo Circle went straight to the street instead of coming around to a center drive up, it would be the same distance from 15th to San Bayo. I mean, I've sat down with Google and tried to figure all this stuff out. Instead, they put up a sign across from us calling it 16th Street. It's the alley that goes to Lincoln Plumbing, and that's been called our cross street, which is, for traffic counting, that's just really an illegitimate thing to do. I'm here for any questions that you may have, and I appreciate you listening to me.
All right. Anybody have any questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. And I encourage you to testify again when we have the hearing on this in the June 23rd.
I believe it'll be June 13th.
June 13th.
And the problem I have is that I'm not going to be here on the 13th.
You can
so
also,
it's pretty important.
Okay. We've also set up to take Zoom, and you can submit written testimony too. But we can flag this and have it be forwarded to the hearing.
Correct. So. What Nyla provided will be included as part of the record.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Action items. Any action items?
No action items.
Okay. I'm doing the...
Get your glasses on.
Hey, I don't need my glasses to read the stuff. I need the right cheat card. This one has people on Zoom for it too, or do I need?
There is one person on Zoom.
Okay. All right. Then I'm calling the public hearings to process to order, and it's file number 1-CUP-22, conditional use permit for Mac Watkins Airport Industrial Village. This public hearing is being conducted utilizing the Zoom video conference platform. Before we get started, I'd like to provide staff with a moment to identify individuals participating virtually. I also like to cover a few ground rules. Individuals wishing to speak may raise their hand proper. To use the raise hand feature, will be found on clicking the participants button on the bottom of the computer screen, the raise hand button on the bottom of a smartphone, or by dialing 9 on a landline. I'll call out the order of testimony in cases where multiple hands are raised. Please keep your microphone muted unless you're speaking. Press 6 to mute and unmute a landline. For persons participating by video or phone, the city can make shared screen features available to those who wish to make a presentation. Information shared with the Planning Commission in this manner is part of the record, and a copy of the materials will need to be provided to staff. For those persons who would like to attend the hearing in person, the computer has been set up and they may provide testimonies using the video conference platform. Quasi-judicial and legislative land use public hearings. I read that one already. This statement applies to all quasi-judicial and legislative land use hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented for the request being heard must be directed towards the applicable criteria in the Newport Comprehensive Plan, Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the Seeker believes to apply to the decision. The failure of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal by the Land Use Board of Appeals based on the issue. An issue may be a basis for appeal to LUBA shall be raised not later than the close of record at the following or this following the evidentiary hearing. Such issues must be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city's decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of an hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and schedule set for submittal of additional testimony, a period for parties to respond to the new testimony, and a period by which the applicant can provide final argument. At this time, I would like to ask Planning Commission to close any actual potential conflict of interest, bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits. Site visit for me.
Boone.
I'm way back from Yaha, so I drove by it.
Months ago.
If anyone present has an objection to participation of any Planning Commission member or the Commission as a whole, please raise that objection now. Okay. If the Planning Commission may, at the request of participant or on its own accord, continue the hearing to a date certain to provide an opportunity for persons to present and rebut new evidence, arguments, or testimonies related to the applicable criteria. Hearing will proceed in the following order: staff report, applicant's testimony, persons in favor, persons opposed, applicant's rebuttal, record closes for public testimony, Planning Commission deliberation, questions, and verbal decision, and a final order and findings will be prepared for consideration at the next meeting. Staff report.
Chair Patrick, I'd like to note that we do have one Zoom participant.
Okay.
Just like to acknowledge them. They are listed as a phone number ending in 613. I assume that is Alan Wells, who is with the applicants. Alan, if that's you on the phone, can you confirm that that is you?
Adam.
He probably has it on mute.
Yes, that is me, yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we're on the staff report.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. I'll be brief. I do have the file with all the various attachments and other information that had been submitted. It's here and present and available at this hearing. The staff report was about 19 pages long. I'll not be going through it word by word, but I'll touch on the high points, and we'll spend a little bit of time on the conditions, recommended conditions of approval. This is as you said, a 10.8-acre site immediately north of the access road to the airport, Southeast 84th. This property is actually leased to Mr. Watkins, and a copy of the lease was included in your packet. The intent is to put is for this to be developed as an industrial park. The challenge that they have is they need to have some certainty as to the permissible range of uses and a concept of record for them to be able to attract tenants, which they're actively working on at this time. Because this property is in an airport development zone overlay, the only way to get an approval for industrial or commercial use is to go through a conditional use permit. Otherwise, it's a P1 public structures, and you're limited to what's allowed in a P1 zone, which would not accommodate industrial and commercial uses. The criteria for a conditional use permit is set out that either if Planning Commission review is required if the site is large enough or over 1 acre in this case, or it can trigger on a number of trips being generated from a project over 50 ADT. So because this is a 10.8 acre site, Planning Commission approval is required under a type 3 process. We provided notice to surrounding property owners and in the Newport News Times as required by the city's ordinance, and that's included. The only comment we received was from city engineer Aaron Collette, and I'll speak to that, which has to do with just pointing out, you know, we do not have a wastewater management system in place right now at that location. The criteria for a conditional use permit are set out in the Newport Municipal Code, Chapter 14. Specifically, they're under 14.34050 and 14.22100F. The conditional use criteria are as follows. The public facilities can adequately accommodate the proposed use. The request complies with the requirements of the underlying zone and overlay zone. The proposed use does not have an adverse impact greater than existing uses on nearby properties, or those impacts can be ameliorated through the imposition of conditions of approval. And there are conditions that are being recommended to do just that. And then a proposed building or building modification is consistent with the kind of design character of what's out there at the airport. Then the additional one is demonstrate that the uses will not create a safety hazard or otherwise limit existing or approved airport uses. So they will not create a safety hazard for existing and or approved airport uses, or they will not otherwise limit existing and or approved airport uses. With respect to the public facilities can adequately accommodate the proposed use, with regard to the sanitary sewer service, this will be served by a large on-site septic system, what we call an LOSS. The Murray Smith analysis, which you previously looked at with the animal shelter conditional use permit, same methodology and reasoning would apply here. There's some additional information I can include in the packet on this particular application, that this project is fully funded at this point to the tune of about $640,000 is what's being set over for that. $75,000 of that was advanced as part of a supplemental budget. I included that information in the packet so that we could get working on this project, which we are doing at this time, taking it through the county sanitarians process and coordinating with the FAA, since where we want to place the septic system, which is all subsurface, is within the airport operations area, actually ideally within the 17 acres that's between the two runways. Is where we want to place it, and we've had conversations with the FAA, and you know, as long as we address their operational concerns, which they have some utilities in that area, and they want to details as to how the boring would occur for the lines going underneath the runways or taxiways, provided we can address that, there wasn't any major issue or hurdle that they had identified, just things that you would expect that they would want to see to make sure that their equipment's not interfered with, things of that nature. So we're moving through that process. The reasoning the commission had previously would be the same here, which is there are four septic systems currently at the airport, three of which are in the southern area, serving the FBO, and I believe it's FedEx and the Coast Guard. That in of itself is evidence that the area is suitable for septic systems. The airport property is over 200 acres. There's plenty of places for us to land this system. It's a 1.4 acre drain field. Whether or not it ultimately ends up between the runways or some other location that's proximate isn't all that material. There's certainly evidence in, enough given the presence of the existing septic systems for the commission to find that it's feasible that a large on-site septic system could be constructed at this location. That said, the timing, if in the unlikely event the timing doesn't work for them and the type of use they're proposing is a low effluent generator, they have put out that they, you know, put forth that they can put a holding tank in short term and then pay for the whole, you know, that to be pumped until the large on-site system is available and operational. So I think that's an entirely reasonable approach. I think there's sufficient evidence for the commission to find that standard has been met. With respect to water service, this is a little bit different than the last conditional use. You knew exactly what was going to be built there, and you had a water utilization letter that they were able to provide in terms of maximum daily usage that Steel Rock could look at and say, yeah, we can accommodate that. Here, they don't know who all of their end users are. Some of those might be uses that don't require a whole lot of water. Others might require quite a bit of water. And so the way I had this set up is that, you know, you can certainly rely upon what was previously provided for the animal shelter project as evidence that Steel Rock has a capacity to serve additional uses out here from their main along US 101. But that as this development proceeds, as each industrial user comes in, or you're going to need to have some confirmation from Steel Rock that they have the capacity to serve these uses as they come in. A similar concept would apply to transportation impacts. You know, so we have a traffic impact analysis code that has triggering thresholds for when a traffic impact analysis is needed. If they exceed those thresholds with a new use, then they would need to go through the traffic impact analysis. At this point in time, 84th is operating fairly well. We've got XL diesel lanes on, you got the turn pockets on 101 for north and southbound traffic that are going to the airport. So that does work with traffic flow out there. So we don't see any issues on that front. Stormwater will be managed with detention or retention facilities as they've outlined in their analysis. They're not required to have theirs smaller than a quarter of acre because they're not within one of the approach surfaces. They're in a transitional area, as discussed later. That said, that they, as part of their application, indicated that they would not have any surface water features over a quarter acre in size, such so that they don't unduly attract birds, which can be a hazard for planes. So we went ahead and included that as a condition in the condition of approval. Electric power is out there. It's provided by Central Lincoln PUD, and the location of the power service is shown on their site plan. Kind of cuts across the south corner of the lease area. So collectively, this information establishes that it's, you know, it's, again, this is a feasibility test with a conditional use, that it's feasible those services can be provided to support industrial and commercial use at this location. When you get into the underlying zone and overlay zone, the overlay zone is probably the most pertinent. The underlying zone doesn't have a whole lot that's relevant to this, the P1 zone. But the overlay does, it has quite a bit. So they did outline the types of uses that they would like. Most of those are light industrial uses. They do want to do residences, potentially kind of a work-live arrangement in the industrial flex space. So if you have somebody who's coming in, wants to do some industrial use, they may end up coming in with, say, a two-story type construction where the upper floor is available as apartment. I mean, that's a concept that could happen. I'll talk about more of this, but you want to take a careful look at the range of uses. This kind of sets aside bars for what can happen moving forward. There are three phases. They're depicted on their site plan. With respect to height limitation, you know, they are in the transitional surface. I included the information on what that means. So that's the area just outside of the approach. You know, where as it says, transitional, as planes transition away or in. Given where they're located, they're closest to the runway 2-20 visual approach surface. I included a map. The vertical height at the boundary there is about 43 feet and goes higher as you go north across the lease area. So none of their buildings are going to be over 35 feet as shown on their profile drawings. So they're well under the approach surface, which is kind of that fail-safe surface that the FAA does not want to see things go past. It's not where planes fly typically, but it's that surface that, hey, if trees get above that, they want them trimmed. They prefer not to see buildings above that height, although it's unavoidable when you get into the airport property proper. And then you get into the land use compatibility standards, and there are a bunch of them that are designed to ensure that as development occurs, it's occurring in a manner that's not going to cause safety issues, back to that original kind of purpose provision. at the airport, so that outdoor lighting is directed such downward directed such that it's not going to distract pilots, that you use materials that are not causing undue amount of glare, again, which would impact pilots. Industrial emissions is applicable here. It wasn't in the last conditional use because, you know, here they're proposing industrial uses. If those industrial uses emit smoke, dust, steam, things of that nature, they have to be inside the building so the ventilation equipment can address that so that you don't have that as an issue for pilots. Communication facilities, they have left the door open for that as a potential use, in which case they need to coordinate with ODOT Aeronautical Division to make sure that the communication facilities are not causing electrical interference with navigational equipment for airport and aircraft. And then that's about it that's relevant on that front. They did provide some calculations relating to parking to demonstrate that the amount of parking that they will be providing internal to the facility will be sufficient to accommodate the type and mix of uses that they envision, and they kind of broke that down in a table, which I included in the staff report. The typical construction examples, they included some photographs in their application materials, similar to what's out there right now in terms of the built form. And in terms of potential hazard, you know, again, I think, you know, where they came at this was they tried to select uses that are going to be least likely to be an issue. Light manufacturing or light industrial uses, those are outright permitted uses typically in an industrial area. You know, they've committed to taking care in terms of how they manage their landscaping to ensure that they're not putting things in there that at mature height are going to be a problem for planes. So they touched on a number of points I think that are relevant under that standard, and there's sufficient information in there for you to find that final standard has been satisfied. With that in mind, I'll touch on the 14 conditions that are listed in here. And, you know, the first has to do, you know, with, you know, this is what any approval that's granted by the Planning Commission is based on the information they provided to you, and they're bound by that. That the applicant is responsible for constructing water and wastewater service to the proposed lease area to support their industrial park. They provided a plan showing how they intend to do that. Similar with their storm drainage, and that's for a 25-year, 24-hour storm event that they need to be able to manage for. That they're responsible for constructing the access road, and they kind of talked about, you know, how they would be doing that, and then individual tenants, I believe, would be constructing the parking and drive aisles that tie to that single access road and cul-de-sac. The traffic impact analysis is going to be required when triggered by the city's code. That a landscaping plan be provided with some details about the location and the species and anticipated peak height of the plantings to make sure that they will not exceed 50 feet in height and maturity, which should work for the bulk of that location. That their outdoor lighting fixtures be downward directed and shielded. That they provide information on the type of exterior materials so we can confirm as part of building plan review that the materials are not going to cause excessive glare, that industrial uses that emit smoke, dust, or steam be contained within structures with ventilation systems to ensure the emissions are not a issue for airplanes, that they obtain written information from the Sea Rock Water District confirming capacity as new uses come in, that they coordinate with ODOT on any radio telephone or television transmission facilities or electric transmission lines to the property to make sure they're not going to cause interference with navigational equipment at the airport or on aircraft, that they obtain sign permits for their monument signs, and it would also frankly apply to their fascia signs too on any buildings. And then that they comply with fire code and building codes. And then the last one is they were looking for 5 years to implement. They may be asking for some adjustment to that. I'll leave that to them if that's something they want to raise. But that's what was included in the application materials. So that's what I have for a presentation. If you have any questions, staff.
Any questions, Derek?
Yeah, Bob.
Yeah. Referring back to our discussion during the work session, I think I would like to see the traffic impact analysis condition be beefed up to take into consideration the cumulative effect mm-hmm. of various tenants. Because as the current code stands, any given one tenant, you know, with two semis pulling in a day is fine. But if you get three of those kind of tenants, then you're over the limit, but you mm-hmm. analyze only one at a time. So can you work something like that in?
Yeah, I can. Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair.
And the other concern, well, just a question. You wrote, I think, in your description somewhere that they're looking possibly for some overnight usage like yurts. Permissible uses are talking about residents and not on the first floor. You don't put a yurt on a roof, I don't think, or I don't know what that reference was. So
that
you can either clarify that or
yeah, I'll take a stab at it, and I'm sure they'll be speaking to it as well. But it has to do with a fly-in village that they're looking to do in phase two, and not so much the live-work option that I was talking about, which is that would be more of a, you know, they, as it was outlined in their application, it'd be for pilots or others, could be even for tourists coming to our area who, you know, for overnight lodging and some recreational amenities. There may be some building code things that come into play given the decibel levels on the phase two area. It's between a 55 and a 65 decibel boundary in terms of the airport master plan. That might be an issue with yurts. I haven't dug into it in great detail, but there are building code provisions that deal with noise sensitive uses such as lodging that could come into play and influence the ultimate, you know, construction type.
Yeah, I was more curious about the C1, mm-hmm. you know, residents not allowed on first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be almost an unreasonable restriction and given the circumstances.
Well, there is also the retail, sales and service, entertainment, RV parks. So it could fall under that one, that conditional use.
Okay.
Which I'd have to go look and see what's
yeah.
inside there, but
mm-hmm.
yeah,
that was the one.
Okay, that was my question, though. Thank you.
Yeah.
Derek, when the lease was entered into between the applicant and the city, What was the expectation of the city as to the use of the parcel? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it was, I think the concept that was presented, you know, and that the council saw when they did the lease was a kind of an industrial park with this kind of flex type range of uses. Some of, you know, ideally they would like to see uses go in there that could support or at least benefit the airport in some way. That's what they're looking for. So think cold storage, for example, a cold storage use, or if you're creating some flex industrial space for small operators, maybe that's a space that could at some point be used by an airport mechanic. Maybe it's not used by an airport mechanic immediately. Maybe it's another type of industrial user, but that kind of space could accommodate and support the airport at some point in time. So, you know, that's the kind of the principle that was out there, was to get some an industrial park in that could create some space that would be there would be some synergy between that and the airport, and there it could support some of the activities going on at the airport.
One more quick question, Derek. Mm-hmm. Should the loss system not be put in place in time and they have to implement the on-site holding tank
mm-hmm.
system? When that septic system does get operational, should we have any kind of environmental mitigation requirement on that tank?
Well, if they disconnect and are no longer utilizing the holding tank and they connect over to the loss, then I believe under the sanitarian's rules, they would have a decommissioning requirement on the tank.
Okay, so we don't have to put that in as a condition.
Yeah, I don't know that we need to go there on the CUP.
Many of these possible usages could very easily have hazardous materials involved with them.
Sure.
And it is not unreasonable to expect that some persons may not dispose of them in a honest, honorable, and non-hazardous method. In other words, they go down the drain, which goes to the septic field, septic tank. Most of these materials, cleaning agents, solvents, gasoline, are detrimental to any septic system. So I'm wondering what kind of mitigation or proof that this kind of material, and it's not just down, it could also be runoff, which eventually, according to this policy, ends up going into, I believe, Grant Creek. We've already damaged a lot of creeks. They indicate that there's a filtering mechanism. I have questions about what that filtering mechanism is, what it can clean out, its efficiency, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All of these practices listed on in the staff report, many of them could produce these toxic materials that I don't wish to see get into a large on-site septic system,
mm-hmm.
which would negate the ability for it to do its job. And any of these materials that go into runoff into a settling pond, many of them float. So they're not going to be cleaned out unless their filtration system, which was not explained. So I do have a couple issues with environmental.
I can speak to concerns. It to a point, and the applicant, I'm sure, can speak to this as well. But, you know, I would say a couple things. One, if the hazardous materials are part of an industrial use that's going into one of these flex spaces, there are provisions in the building code. It's an H occupancy, hazardous occupancy, where we take a look at it. So that's one spot where you can make sure that the infrastructure is in place internal to the building to try to kind of prevent illicit discharge from happening. So that's one spot where you can pick it up. Two, you know, it's not all that different than the city's wastewater treatment plant, just at a smaller scale. If we observe that stuff's going in there that's interfering with the operation of the septic system, just as we observe from time to time stuff's going into our wastewater treatment plant that's interfering with its operation, then we promptly engage to get that issue sorted out and addressed. And so, because we have it in both, I mean, as you know, I mean, you put something into our wastewater system now that goes to the wastewater treatment plant, then they're dealing with it on the solid side, you know, when it goes in for treatment in the plant. And then, you know, and so the nice thing you have with a large septic system is you have a finite number of users who can be causing it, and we're not chasing it throughout the entire city. You know, when it comes to your surface water, you know, your stormwater management, you know, that's principally going to be coming off of your paved surface and rooftop. So that shouldn't be an issue as much as, say, the example of somebody putting something hazardous or chemical related into the septic system. But that's about as far as I can go with it, because the septic system is going to have to be maintained by the city. Our wastewater staff would be handling it, the same folks that work at the wastewater treatment plant. So they would be on that if there were operational problems with the septic system.
Okay. So Derek, how many years before the city extends their services down to the airport?
Long, long time.
Long, long time. Okay.
No, you're talking about, you know, $6.5 million. We probably are not going to see that unless you get to a point where Surfland and some of those other large rural residential developments where you have a high concentration of septic systems, because they're relatively, you know, half acre to acre type lots there. If you had DEQ step in and say, hey, we're having a groundwater contamination issue, or you had a large number of those failing all at the same time, you know, where we were asked somehow to step in and provide service, and there would be some, you know, maybe some state funding that came along with that, in addition to those private property owners having to pony up, that would give you the kind of incentive to get that system all the way down there. But what we've mapped out and did with the Murray Smith work was figure out, okay, well, what really are our four, you know, what are our options down there? We looked at two different methods of getting the gravity sewer system down there, and in both cases, it's well beyond what we can financially accomplish. So it left us with two options, either a large on-site septic system or a package treatment plant, and the Urban Renewal Agency signed off on that as the two options for the next, you know, for the foreseeable build-out future at the airport. So we're pursuing the large on-site septic system, but we do actually have the funding reserved for the package treatment plant. It has its own regulatory challenges. You know, think of it as a small wastewater treatment plant. So we're going the large on-site system and expect that, you know, that's going to work out.
I think your report suggested that the rent that would be collected would be split between the city and the airport. Is there any balance that's been decided? Is it a 50-50 split, a 28-80? I mean, what are they perceiving?
I didn't really look at that too carefully because it wasn't related to the approval standard that's before you. So I really don't have any information to share with you on that one.
My guess is that would be resolved through the finance department and the budget. The airport has a budget.
Right.
And that would be whatever proportion goes directly to the airport would be reflected.
The same
in
as the
budget.
Percentage of the normal budget is what you're suggesting.
But it isn't going to have any direct budget impact for several years because the initial payment's already been made.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There's a 2.5-year window before any rent comes in.
Derek, what would be the impact on the proposal if there was a requirement for the traffic impact analysis be completed immediately rather than subject to, you know, as time goes on and the use increases? I think we can anticipate an increased use.
You can. To do a proper traffic impact analysis, you need to have a sense of what the use is. And so I think the challenge form, if you were to try to impose a traffic impact analysis now, or actually one with their first use coming in, because I don't know that you could really sync it up now.
So you have to wait until you see what
the need to know what's coming in. I mean, they could have a whole number of small industrial users that collectively still don't trigger any kind of improvement requirement at 101. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, they could end up attracting some heavy users that, you know, get into the discussion about further improvements. So it really depends on, you know, who they have coming in.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Derek? Okay. Seeing none? Oh, no? Okay. Applicant's testimony, this is your turn.
Great, thank you. I'll start anyway. So my name is Lindsay McLean Godwin. I'm a planner for MSS Engineering. I'm here to speak on behalf of the applicants, the leasee and Alan Wells. So the leasee is Mark Watkins. He's here and can speak if you have questions directly for him. And I've got my coworker here, Noah Thompson. He's an engineer, so he can speak to some of the more technical aspects of the proposal.
Excuse me. Is that microphone on, Sherry? Oh, okay. Maybe you could speak a little closer.
Yeah, I hear him.
Bob, thank you.
I'm old, too.
And so I have a presentation. It's very pretty. If it's on. Oh, there we go. Okay. All right, so Derek went over everything very thoroughly, so I will be going over a bit of the same stuff, but hopefully in concert with that, and obviously from our perspective. So as I was doing research for this project, I discovered multiple city-produced documents over the last, you know, from 2017, that I realized are really why we're here. There has been an effort, I don't know, it seems like probably many of you might have been part of various parts of these documents, where there was an effort to identify locations at the airport that would be designated as non-aeronautical commercial and industrial areas, or areas that could have commercial, industrial, and other uses. And in addition, there was an effort, or is a continuing effort, to provide more certainty for developers about what uses can be allowed in these areas and to provide infrastructure to support these potential uses. And as Derek described, the community septic system is being funded. And did you say has construction started on that at all?
We're working through the sanitarians process right now and working with the FAA on the design.
Yeah, as well as the intertie between the water district and the city's water systems. So as Derek mentioned, the zoning, however, does not reflect this expressed desire to have primarily commercial and industrial uses in these areas. And it doesn't appear that a zone change is an option or has not currently been explored by the city to more clearly explain what uses can be allowed. And so the conditional use application is our only route to find that clarity. And so really it seems sort of like a zone change for a limited amount of time. And it's until we have that clarity, it's not realistic for us to find people to rent. And there's just too much uncertainty for them. And so that's why we're here, is to find out what we can do and get that clarity. And hopefully be in support of these plans that have been developed, because this seems to be the vision for the city, or a part of it. As Derek went over, these are some of the five primary criteria. He already read through them, so I won't do that as well. But what I don't have listed here are those land use compatibility criteria. But I will be going, I will be indirectly addressing those as I speak to these criteria. So criteria number one is related to the public facilities. As we've mentioned, the community septic system is in the works. And we would be providing holding tanks if needed, you know, if the construction timeframes don't line up. My understanding of septic systems is that during the permitting process, the proposed use is declared, and the for Benton County, they're called environmental health specialists. I'm not sure what the staff are called here in that department, but they determine whether or not the use can be supported by the septic system. So if it's got toxic materials going into it, then they would identify that that's not allowed. Like, I know wineries sometimes can't use septic systems because of the things going into it, for example. I believe there may be some checks and balances there as well. But Derek can clarify, tell me if I'm wrong. We have the Seal Rock Water District providing water to the site, as well as water for this fire suppression. So the uses will likely primarily be storage, warehouse, office uses. And those uses typically have lower water needs. But for uses with higher water demand or would need a higher level of water fire suppression, those uses would either need to be limited in size or potentially have additional on-site storage as required by the fire marshal, or until the intertie project is completed, which is supposed to increase the, if I did my math right, is supposed to increase the fire flows by approximately 78%. I think it was like 2,250 flow. And vehicular access is from, you know, Southeast 84th Street. And stormwater, as mentioned, would be collected on site and treated on site. And we will be going through the required permitting through DEQ, Department of State Lands, and the Army Corps of Engineers to meet any of their requirements. So if they require additional treatment for industrial uses, you know, we would certainly be required to do that. And power is provided by the Central Lincoln People's Utility District. And we have had a verbal conversation with them where they felt that power would be no problem. They wouldn't give us anything definitive in writing until we have an actual service request. It's a little early for that, so. So you may have seen in the staff, well, my narrative and the staff report, I tried to go all out on the parking calculations. And we were asked to do a maximum floor area. And so that scenario is a theoretical situation where every square inch would be developed, and it provided space for buildings, sidewalks, parking, and drive aisles. And so it's not realistic because it doesn't include, you know, stormwater, landscaping, just, you know, the uneven nature of the site. So if that was the maximum floor area, single story, it would require 246 spaces. And using this other scenario, which is the conceptual site plan, using a similar ratio of uses with either the one-story or two-story buildings, the maximum parking would be the 248. And using that same site plan, when I calculated out the area made available for parking spaces, we actually exceeded both of the amounts needed for the two scenarios. So. And then, of course, if there are uses that required more parking or higher amount of parking, they would either need to be limited in size or somehow it'd have to be negotiated between the different uses, you know, as allowed by code. Okay. So does this request comply with the requirements of the underlying zone and the airport development overlay? And so the overlay is why we're here, really. It's what's allowing us to request non-aviation related commercial and industrial uses in an area designated for non-aeronautical use on the airport master plan. And so we have attempted to be as consistent with the city's refinement plan goals and objectives, both for this year and last year, and the airport master plan and the adopted budget, which all stated that the purpose of the non-aeronautical development areas is for commercial and industrial development, and that the city intended to provide a clear understanding of what development is authorized in these uses. And the uses that we're proposing, we feel, are similar to the existing uses at the airport, which are airport hangar space, warehouse space, car rentals, emergency services, as well as a welcome center. And the uses that we've proposed, as Derek mentioned, are all permitted uses. We didn't, you know, there was no point in requesting a conditional use since we're going through a conditional process. And by the city staff have identified these permitted uses as being uses that would have minimal impacts, and so therefore they don't need a conditional or additional review. They're supposed to be compatible with similar other uses of that nature. All right. And so that criteria falls pretty well into this next criteria where, you know, if those uses you're proposing fit within the underlying zone and the overlay zone, then they would likely also not have adverse impacts on the existing uses or adjacent properties. As I described, the existing uses that are there, our proposed storage, warehouse, office uses, community services, repair services, light manufacturing, those kinds of uses are pretty similar to the existing uses. We've proposed to contain any potential uses that do cause excessive dust, noise, or vibrations would be enclosed in a building or buildings, so that any of those impacts could be mitigated. The fly-in village concept is really an effort to support the airport itself, to try to help it be generating more income from bringing in additional planes, make this more of a destination kind of location. I mean, Newport already is, but if they have additional amenities, maybe they can stay a little longer, or they can tell all the friends to come and try to help meet the Airport Advisory Committee's goal of increasing revenue for the airport and for the city. And so Mark came up with this concept, and so he was thinking of ways that would make it more attractive for pilots and tourists of that nature. And they might need car rentals, maybe equipment rentals, tourist information. The overnight accommodations are the service entertainment use category. It's the 30-day overnight accommodations or less kind of thing. And so those, I believe, could be in yurts or little smaller living, you know, overnight spaces. The living units on top of the other uses are more for maybe security living spaces, or potentially just residential use, to clarify the difference between those two. And so criteria number four is about the aesthetics of the proposal. In looking at the existing site and the buildings there, there didn't seem to be a consistent color palette. And it's primarily metal painted buildings, except for the Welcome Center. It's more like hardy plank, kind of traditional design it looked like. And so our proposed building materials are intended to be low maintenance and highly durable. Primarily with the walls would be like concrete, CMU block, cement siding, wood siding, rock or brick, and the roofs would be standing seam metal roofing or asphalt shingle. We keep the buildings to 35 feet max. And we do have some examples in the narrative of buildings that have been used at other development sites of the applicants. And these are modular buildings that can be flexed for many different types of uses, both retail or, commercial or industrial, warehousing, that kind of nature. And for any of these buildings, they will be reviewed by city staff. You know, they'll have to go through a permitting process to make sure that the code is adhered to. All right, so criteria five, uses will not create a safety hazard or otherwise impede the airport uses. So the airport master plan provided this site as an appropriate location, and it was leased for this apparent use, or these apparent categories of uses. We're proposing the maximum of 35 feet so that it won't have any sort of conflict with planes. The building designs are intended to not cause any problems with the airport. And additionally, the sign and site lighting will be located or oriented towards the ground or the surface, the sign or the building, and it would be shielded and limited to the minimum brightness and coverage required. And the site itself is physically separated from the airport by 84th Street, existing vegetation and fencing. And as Derek mentioned, the landscaping plants, I actually found this really great manual from an airport in the East Coast where they have a whole palette of plants intended, specifically chosen so that they don't attract birds and mammals that can cause an conflict with planes. And it's a great resource. And the limit to the trees will be 50 feet in height. So in conclusion, we feel that the criteria are met, and so thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to your questions. I'm sorry, and I should ask if Alan, if you have anything you'd like to say.
Can you hear me?
Ah, there is. Yes, we can.
Oh, thank you. No, I don't have anything more to say. Lindsay, this is I thought your presentation was pretty thorough. We have a pretty good sense of the market in Newport, and we think the uses that we've outlined in the proposal are very much in line with what the what the market is looking for. The demand for industrial uses, flex type space uses and storage uses is, is very much in evidence. I think there's little, if any, vacancy in any of those types of uses, and I think those uses would do very well in stimulating interest and activity at the airport, which was the whole intention to begin with. So I think that this came about, this proposal came about over a long period of time and thinking through what would likely work at the airport. And I think all of the uses that have been specified in the proposal are valid and very workable in as far as what's needed right now in the marketplace. So that would be my only comment.
Okay, any questions for the applicant?
Mr. Wells, I have a question. It seems that the proposal is divided into three phases and that you'd move on to phase two and three after income had been generated and phase one was, for want of a better term, up and running. Is that still the plan, and what would be the timeline for implication of all three phases?
Well, I need to specify what my role in this is. I was retained by the City of Newport to help in the leasing of four parcels around the airport. This first one was leased by MC Watkins, Mark Watkins. Mm-hmm. Mark then subsequently asked me to help him in developing a plan for the development of this mixed-use project, and I have done that. I don't believe I will be a participant in this project necessarily. I might be. But I can speak to your question, though, and that is that given the amount of money and the complexity and of this project, I don't think all three phases would be built out at the same time. I would be very surprised. And I think any developer is going to look to the first phase to see what has worked and what hasn't worked. What type of uses are most in demand and which aren't, and then phases two and three will be tailored to meet those, to meet what's worked and what hasn't worked. I would suspect, given current market conditions, that the three phases could be built out within the first 5 years. The demand is there. I mean, the demand for this kind of project in Newport is certainly there. I think what any developer is going to want to do is just tailor the project to most meet what is in highest demand and is economically feasible. It's a strange time in our market. Costs are extremely high, as I think all of us know. Rents haven't kept up with the increase in costs. So, any development's going to really look at the financial characteristics of the project. I think this will work economically, but I think some tweaking might be necessary for phases two and three. But again, to answer your question, I think all three phases will be built out in the first 5 years or in the next 5 years. But it's a guess. I mean, market conditions change every day, as you know. But I'd say, given where we are right now, this project should be completed in 5 years.
Thank you.
I have a question. You say that there's a big demand for this type of proposal. Is that based on some surveys you've done, or is that based on people asking for this? I mean, how did you arrive at the specific demand? And Specifically, what are we looking, mixed use? Are we looking this for more storage or warehouse space? What is it that they, that the public wants?
No, it's a good question. I have a management, a property managed, commercial property management company, and I manage three similar projects in Newport, Aquarium Village and Newport's Business Plazas East and West. So I've got a pretty good sense as to what people are looking for. I mean, all three of those projects are nearly 100% occupied with at times a waiting list. And it's that kind of project that I think would be successful at the airport. You know, a developer is going to look to what has worked or what is currently working in Newport now. And, you know, I can explain to them firsthand how much in demand that kind of space is. I mean, we really literally don't have space available, and anything that comes available is immediately leased. If we have a space available for more than 3 or 4 weeks, it's very surprising. And it's that kind of space that is being proposed for this project. Not only, you know, shop space for a painting contractor, but also storage space for a commercial fisherman. I mean, it's space that is flexible. That's the very nature of flex-type industrial projects. They can be used for a variety of purposes. And what we tried to do in this proposal is outline as many potential uses as we possibly could. I mean, but it's really difficult because there could be an infinite number of uses, but all kind of fitting within that flex type industrial storage, definition, I guess. But yes, there is very good, there's very high demand for that kind of space in Newport right now.
So basically, I mean, you manage Aquarium Village, which is a big chunk of it is retail, but I guess it would be the east end of it is really much more storage, where I know there's some fishermen in there, some artists that do have kilns in there for pottery. So you're looking to do that type of thing rather than, you know, if there's some retail, it'd be small retail and more on the light industrial, I guess, storage.
No, it's a fair comment, but I think the project that's more indicative of what's going to be built at the airport is Newport Business Plaza East. Okay. It's where the Muscle Studio is, for example. I think we have 30 tenants in that building. That is more what I think is envisioned for the Newport, for the airport property, where it's a, you know, it's the painting contractor, the sign manufacturer, the, that I think is what's in higher demand. Aquarium Village is a little bit of an outlier, but the same kinds of uses, maybe not so much focused towards the retail side of it, more the commercial and more the commercial warehouse type use. But I think Newport Business Plaza East is probably more indicative of what's being planned for the airport.
Okay, thank you. One final question. The piece of this that really is kind of more intriguing for me on a personal basis is the Fly-In Village, which is a, you know, a novel concept. I'm not sure about the staying in yurts, but people that own airplanes have a lot of money. Is this gets up? Is this more pie in the sky, or are we really going to attempt to do that?
Well, I'll
go ahead and take it from here, Alan. Thank you.
I was going to say, because I was going to refer you to Mark for that question.
Because the Fly-In Village, honestly, this has been a long project.
And I said, how can I make this fun? So many of you may or may not be aware that there's a whole entire, if you will, way of life, similar to the RVs. And it's becoming quite popular. It's getting very difficult to travel with families. So what has happened, Bill, and I appreciate you bringing up what's going on with this village. I appreciate that. So I was laying in bed when I said, listen, there's three or four or five big groups out there, similar to Good Sam Club and RV Campers, and they have their own individual groups. And what they do is they get together and say, hey, you won't believe it, there's a little campground up there, Salishan, at the, you know, the runway up at Salishan. And in the woods there's a little campground. You can do so this has exploded, Bill. And I was laying in bed one night and I had an epiphany. I said, listen, Newport is a destination, beautiful community. It's a tourist attraction. The whole community's attraction, the whole coast is attraction. Why can't we make that Newport Airport similar in that concept to where the word gets out, hey, you guys, fly to Newport. They've got rental cars. You can take the car, and I've seen it. I've been with them. The pilots drive down to the bayfront. They load up their cooler with fresh crab and clams, and away that back to Montana they go. It's a big, big business for our airport. So what I would like to do, Bill, the vision of that, is have maybe five yurts. That's it, a little campground. So the word gets out, you guys, you cannot believe what Newport has done. And it will not take long that we're going to have a two-year waiting list for pilots and their families. What happened just last week is a family flew in from Montana. They had a family down in Walport. They all met together at the airport, and they hung out. It was wonderful. So that's what that is. Without any conceptual drawings, I just threw together four or five yurts, a little campground, maybe a little building with a small stackable washer and dryer. I don't know. But that is generally the concept of what my pilot village would be, is to turn our airport into a destination airport. The word gets out. It enhances the entire tourist attraction of our community. It enhances the bayfront. It enhances our entire community. It enhances the Newport with, we have, three courtesy cars. So you call the airport, I'm flying in. Yeah, you can take the car for 3 or 4 hours, bring it back full of gas, that kind of thing. But I would tell you, it would not take long, given who we are and where our beautiful location is at, that the word would get out and Newport Airport would be literally a destination fly-in airport.
Would you envision being able to, via the FAA, of course, put a taxiway in and a little tarmac?
No. Absolutely not, because that's outside the fence. So what they would do is they would fly in their plane. We have tons of air. I wish I had an air, but anyway, we have lots of places to park the airport. They tote their camp stuff or whatever, and it's just across the street. So that would be a walking facility. We would not have any aircraft or vehicles in this area. It would be strictly, a lot of people now, Bill, they're actually making electric bicycles that fold up. Yeah. They're taking them in their plane. It's really a cool way of life, if you will, or a way of vacationing. It's exploding. I'm a part of three or four of these groups on Facebook and Twitter and all, and it's exploding where these people are going. And it's a big network, if you will, of these fly-in campgrounds. So that's okay. What I envision that being.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Mark, I'm having a hard time grasping exactly what the concept is, other than it's open and flexible. You know, when I first heard about your concept, I was thinking what an ideal place for, say, United Parcel Service or FedEx to, you know, have a some type of a shop there, kind of like what they have up near Iron Mountain, you know, when they bring in their packages. Now I'm hearing like a fly-in campground.
Well, what this would be, and again, what this would be is it would be in the corner. It would be up in the corner. It wouldn't be a part of the flex units, if you will. It would be a whole separate area. We have bike paths up there. There's a plan right now from the park, and I believe within the parks to make the trail all the way come in from Wilder Unit and eventually attach to the airport in South Beach. We want to make it interconnectability. So, Braulio, this would not be a part, if you will, of the flex unit. This would be...
Okay, the flex units are in phase one.
Yes, this would be back in the corner, a whole nother little thing.
Is your fly-in.
That's correct. That's correct. It would not be, it would be back in the corner, if you will, of the property away from the industrial site. It would just be, if you will, a cat's meow of another way of putting Newport, the city of Newport, and in particular the airport on the map.
Now, would you go ahead and all the conditions are met and everything is approved? Would the yurt or the little camp facility be something that you would want to build concurrently in with phase one? Would you want to get like a jump on that, or would you incorporate that back into phase two and three?
Honestly, Gary, I mean, I don't know how this all works. I'm just a guy that loves my airport. I would like to do that in phase one, if, and we could probably narrow down the actual location, but it would be away from phase one, if you will. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't require water. It wouldn't require hardly anything, just to put my goal, again, my goal and my vision would make Newport Airport a destination airport, give the people a reason to fly here now, a real reason, so.
Thank you.
You know, you heard us discuss concerns about the wastewater. Do you have any comments on the wastewater issue?
I actually have a few comments on the on that, but I'd like to respond to Jim Hensel's, mm-hmm. Henselman's question from earlier. The so first of all, the way the site is set up, the we're proposing grinder pumps and pressure sewers to pipe all the effluent and discharge from the all three phases up the hill towards the runway and where the or not the runways the where the drain fields are going to be. The way these things work is that right at the buildings you have not a holding tank, but a smaller tank where the grinder pump station is located. And these intercept all of the contaminants that you were concerned about getting into the drain fields. They're very easy to maintain, and you can clean them out as needed. On top of that, also, there would be no runoff to speak of getting into these systems, because our storm drain system would be totally independent. We're proposing water quality treatment in in accordance with the Department of Environmental Quality's regulations for what gets into their streams. I think the golden rule, as they say, is 80% total suspended solids. It's the same rule that they use in the city of Portland, the city of probably Newport, and every other jurisdiction in the world or in the United States that governs water quality treatment. What it means is that water comes into the streams clean, basically. On top of that, they also have stormwater detention systems that will control the rate of runoff, dial it back to pre-development conditions so that there's no damage to the stream itself from, you know, erosion-type damage from runoff coming off the site.
Any other questions?
Well, I'm glad that you addressed my concern. I'm afraid it wasn't very convincing, only because I have an immense amount of experience in this field. You cannot have pavement without runoff. Your pavement will be covered with oil, grease, solvent stripping off trucks and cars.
Of course.
That's a given.
Yes.
So it's going to go into your containment ponds. That's where I'm most concerned with. And many things go into your septic field. And I really don't want to argue it. It's just an issue I have. Many things are in solution. And so grinders and filters don't affect that at all. I'm familiar with a grind and pumping situation in another state that actually I started campaigning when I was 15. I'm 70. And when I was 15, I was poo-pooed because at 15, nobody believes you. By the time I was 25, all of the residents understood, oh, gosh, Jimmy was right. Then it took another 30 years to get a pump and grind situation in for 12 lakes, which had become severely covered with blue-green algae, dropping property values dramatically because of the smell and the look of your lake. With a pump and grind system, in 5 years, each and every lake started to recover. And these were, thankfully, rural areas where there weren't businesses next to the lake, just residential property. So we are dealing with the typical nitrogen, phosphate, potassium issue. People were putting their Scott's fertilizer in the lake, only it was coming out of their toilets. We got that stopped. And so there are systems, so I know they can work. But it's taken a lot of effort by communities to get that changed. That's why my concern is so great. That will be that on-site, large on-site septic system will need to be protected dramatically and wholeheartedly. There are some systems, they're very expensive. They probably won't be covered by the estimates that you used here. So anyways, it's just, I'm a biologist, you know? I saw everything get polluted and I've seen things cleaned up and I know it doesn't have to happen again, okay? And I think Mark is understanding of that. It's only a small piece of your project, but it's an important piece of the project.
I thank you for that, Jim.
That's my point.
I agree.
You know, I like your fly-in. I knew a bunch of the flying farmers of America. And I'm in a wilderness area that has a landing strip, and here comes 30 planes in. And I'm gobsmacked. And it's all these flying ranchers from Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, Montana, and they had come there for a weekend camp out. And they were quite a crowd. We were backpacking. It was quite a crowd. And
I hope they left
group.
The
I can see this right. happening for your project. I think it's a great idea.
I hope they left it cleaner than they did when they got there.
Oh, they did. I was impressed.
Thank you.
You know, I was impressed. So sorry to take this long.
No, it's
around the back 40, but I did want to explain my position clearly because I know you mean well.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the proponent? Okay, thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? I'd ask, any persons opposed? Being that there are none, I assume you waive your rebuttal. Okay. We'll close the record and start deliberations with Gary.
Well, I really like the idea, especially like the idea of the fly-in campground. I think that's a great proposal to help for promotion for the city and the airport. As long as all the requirements are covered and met, I'm for the project. I think it's going to be some time, you know, as this thing develops, we might end up with some additional questions. I think we all remain to be flexible as far as traffic control and kind of is, you know, see what kind of businesses they start to have in. But I think we should consider moving it forward and see how it goes.
I agree that it's a great concept. The basic industrial park, if it's needed, as has been said in testimony, is fabulous. And then the little additional piece of some yurts and fly-in amenities. That sounds like a neat idea. I don't see it as the central part of this particular proposal, but it's certainly a fun addition. And but if that industrial warehouse concept works out, my only concerns are, as I mentioned, the whole traffic analysis and making sure that the big picture is taken into account rather than passing little impacts and not summing them up. But I think Derek's going to wordsmith one of the conditions to to make sure that that's covered, and I wish you all the best, and I'm fully supportive.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, well, we're, the whole thing before us here is to have a conditional use permit that the current code doesn't allow us to do because it's an airport type facility, public. So we're, you know, and going through the staff report, going through, was it Melissa?
Lindsay,
pardon me. Lindsay's PowerPoint slide. It certainly appears to me that we've satisfied all the requirements necessary to do a conditional use permit. Obviously, in talking to Alan on the Zoom call, we have a demand for light industrial, and heaven, I mean, the airport needs some help. It's needed help for a long time. If we can develop some light industrial out there, I tell you, I am all for it. They fly in, you know, having been a pilot, I think it's a wonderful idea. So I'm all for it, and I have no concerns.
Right, sir. Well, I wish we knew a little more about the tenants. It's a chicken and egg conundrum here for everybody. And I have to place my trust in the three people sitting in front of me to select tenants, carefully remembering what this community is. And I hope you will do so. It will increase tax base. That's always good. That might mean that my taxes go down a bit.
Not gonna happen.
Okay.
I don't know the budget.
I was trying to be optimistic here. You know, so
it just won't go up as fast.
Okay. So you know, I still have some hesitation, but in large measure, dealing with all these unknowns that we're trying to juggle, we need to move this one direction or the other. So I can support this with the, I am concerned about traffic because we just don't know. I mean, if a big box store ends up there, that would kill that, but that's not what you're leaning towards. So I can go along with this project. And I hope my judgment of the three people in front of me is solid.
The applicant has met the criteria for the conditional use permit. Again, I had concerns about the traffic impact, and our planning director indicated that the traffic impact analysis could come later as the traffic increased. You know, we know it can get pretty scary out there on Highway 101 near the airport, especially come July and August, okay? Those 2 months of the year. And we heard Mr. Wells. Mr. Wells told us that there's a need, which seems to suggest that there's going to be a economically successful project, because we don't want to leave a mess out there, Mark Watkins. And you are a zealous advocate of your own proposal. And so I wouldn't have a problem with supporting this proposal.
I believe it meets the criteria. I think it's a little odd to be pre-granting conditions, but it's not the normal process that we normally do. But in this case, I understand the reasoning behind it.
Sure.
In order for somebody, you can't wait and try to sell somebody a maybe. If you know who's the planning commission when they show up, you know. But I'm okay with that. I like the concept. I like the fly-in village stuff. I like having the flex spaces. I think some of these parking requirements are a little more than what they really need. I'm like sitting there going, really? I mean, but I guess if you're running a warehouse, then you're thinking about truck parking.
Sure.
Is what it amounts
sure.
to. So,
exactly.
If, you know, like FedEx does do something there, then you may end up with that kind of parking situation. But I really like to see that it gets connected to the airport, but I think that's going to take time. The first tenants in there are probably not going to be connected to the airport at all. I mean, it's kind of a given. You sell to who you got out there right now. That said, I'm kind of all in favor for it. So
success breeds success.
Yep.
Would the chair entertain a motion?
Yeah, I like to have a motion.
I move that the plan commission accept the staff report and approve the conditional use permit as requested by the applicant in file number 1 CUP 22.
Yes, with the 14 conditions.
With the existing conditions as outlined by Mr. Tokenos on page 18 and 19, and there are 14 conditions.
Okay, seconded. Any more discussion on the issue? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Your name is Mark.
Sorry, I missed who seconded that.
Bob. Bob.
Sorry. They all did. All of them. Every one of them.
Don't leave us with egg on our face, Mark.
It's good to see you, Braulio.
Yeah, but Mark's name is on it, so, you know, we always can fall back.
Yes, but is there a launch line?
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I appreciate that.
No.
You need the good agenda?
I'm looking for the
good
agenda.
Thank
you.
For that, there's new business, unfinished business, director's comments.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Okay with nothing? Yeah,
well,
that's simple, then.
He's adjourned. All right.
We're out of here. Otherwise, the
gentlemen.